Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, and welcome to American Conservative Party Radio. I really want to let that run through, you know, the entire thing. I really like that music. It's called Cruising for Bruising by Basha. Good evening, Bill.
Good evening, Tracy. How the heck are you?
I be here.
All right.
I'm Tracy. That's Bill. We're going to be your hosts tonight for our very first episode of American Conservative Radio since the whole world started liking us again. Were you here? You were here last week, Bill. Didn't you notice it? About 10:30 last Tuesday night, all of a sudden you got this overwhelming sense that the whole world liked us again.
Can't you just feel the love?
Woo! I'm
cheering. I think it sent a thrill up my leg.
Yeah. And it might not have anything to do with it being only 24 degrees outside.
No, nothing like that.
All right. Happy Veterans Day to all of you vets.
I'll second that.
My father served in Germany in 55 to 57. I served in the Air Force from 77 to 81. My brother also joined in 77. He retired in, I think it was 94, 96, something like that. And my nephew is currently serving, and he returned about 10 days ago. Actually, it's been a little bit longer than that, about 14 days ago from his second tour in Iraq. To all veterans, I think it's a wonderful thing that you have done, and I honor you on this day. But this day is actually more important personally to me for a really, really good reason. Today is my father's birthday. Dad is 76. Mom occasionally listens to the show, so Dad, happy birthday, although I did call him last night right around midnight to say happy birthday. And in one of those oddities, my youngest sister was also born today. So the oldest person in our family and the youngest person in our family, born on the same day. My sister turns 40 this year. Welcome to the Overhill Gang, dear sister Elizabeth.
Yes, indeed.
We haven't actually found out whether we're going to have 60 senators on the Democratic side in the Senate. I don't think it's going to be that way. I think it's going to be 57, which is where the count currently is, if I recall. And even if Ted Stevens in Alaska gets booted, which he should, because he's going to be too arrogant not to actually resign his position, after being elected, after being a convicted felon. Hello,
exactly.
People!
Hey, there's a great tradition of that in both parties, though.
Well, at least he wasn't dead.
Yeah, well, that's true.
You know, in Missouri, they elect dead people.
Yep.
You know, Alaska, they just they just elect, you know, convicted felons. But apparently they do that in Georgia and Washington, D.C. and
Louisiana and
Chicago, they use dead people to elect convicted felons.
There you go.
So, you know, I suggested to somebody this evening that I'm having a significant problem tolerating the level of stupidity that is apparently running just rampant through our population. But, you know, that's democracy for you. You know,
and unfortunately, you can't cure stupid.
No. Well, actually, now, see, I'm a big fan of the Darwin Awards. So.
Oh, yes. Yeah, I like those.
I would suggest that promotes a cure for stupidity if it's done early enough.
Yes.
So, I get those whenever they come out. I actually end up usually with one or two books because people know how much I like them. And we sit around when we're taking long drives and CJ reads some of the truly, truly stupid things that people do that get themselves killed.
Yes.
Voting is not one of them, folks. I'm not suggesting that, voting is something that should get you killed, but I shouldn't say but. I don't actually mean but.
You know, in some parts of the world, Tracy, it does get you killed.
No, that's true.
Yep.
Yeah, that's true.
So we really ought to take it seriously about our ability to vote and not having it kill us, regardless of whether we agree with the outcome or not.
Hey, you know what? My clock is showing something funny here.
Uh-oh.
We have a caller. I believe I know who it is. Rick?
Hi.
Well, Rick, welcome to the show.
Yeah, it's good to be here.
I caught you off guard, didn't I?
I thought we had a technical difficulty there.
Well, we actually do, and I want to see if I can fix it. So,
okay.
Bill, I'm going to actually ask you to, talk to Rick and talk about how things have worked out election-wise in your two states while I go see if I can fix it. So, you guys talk. I'll be right back.
Super.
Okay.
So Rick, you're in South Carolina, as I recall.
Right.
And I have to tell you, I did not follow the election returns from there. So tell me a little bit about how the election went in your state.
Well, South Carolina is a Republican state. You know, bought and paid for, as the case may be. And so Lindsey Graham got reelected.
Okay.
A Republican senator. And I wasn't real happy with him myself, but the guy that was running against him was bordering on communism. So,
oh boy,
what do you do, right?
Yeah, well, sometimes you hold your nose.
Yeah, and Bob Inglis, who's my representative, was he's in bed with Lindsey Graham, as it were, and he got reelected also. Part of, I guess, my agenda for the next 2 years is to find somebody else to run against this guy. it was an interesting election in that nobody got elected to office that wasn't already an incumbent.
Really?
They put everybody else back in, except for one guy in Spartanburg County for the state Senate race, who retired, and his replacement in the Republican Party got, he won the election. And he actually shows some promise. I spoke to him Friday, I believe, and he's a true conservative.
Good.
So
excellent.
I have to have some faith in this guy.
All right.
Get him working with our governor, who's also a real conservative, and maybe we can do some things here.
Well, that would be really great news if that can come to pass. I have to tell you that the state of affairs in California are not really the same.
Right.
Although my federal representative, Wally Herger, was reelected, had a fairly weak challenger and a local guy from my county who challenged him on the Democrat side and came up short. So Wally is back in. Wally is mostly a conservative. He occasionally goes off the path, but for the most part, he's pretty reliable in terms of conservative things. The rest of our federal delegation is pretty dark blue. Doesn't really have a lot to do with philosophy, I don't think, as it has to do with gaining and retaining power.
Right.
So there are some loons there, but there are some people that actually think. The problem is they understand that if they do not go along, at least on important pieces of legislation, they're likely to find a challenger even further to the left than they are. So there you go. We have blessed the nation with Nancy Pelosi out of San Francisco.
Shame on you.
Yeah, tell me about it. The choice, interestingly enough, was between her and Cindy Sheehan.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not really sure which one would have been worse, but nevertheless, there you go.
Yeah.
Oh, I would have preferred Cindy Sheehan, actually.
Well, sure, because she's not as politically astute, so would have
she's
been
an idiot.
Relegated to the back bench.
Right.
Well, we have some of those out here in California, Tracy.
Been there, lived there.
Yeah,
I understand.
Yeah, I understand.
did
you get our technical difficulties fixed?
I did, thank goodness.
Good.
I had made a slight mistake in as much as that I had changed the time. When we changed the normal time from 10 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
to 9 p.m. Central,
mm-hmm.
The recurring setup isn't recurring. I have to actually go in and change each week ahead of time to 9 o'clock instead of 10 o'clock. Unfortunately, the recurring setup was also only 30 minutes, and, of course, we've expanded to an hour. And so I'm looking at my clock just as we're saying hi to Rick, and it said 23 minutes, and I'm going like, well, that ain't right. I got lots to talk about.
Yeah,
I'm
really.
I have to talk faster. Kind of good. So now we got 47 minutes, and
okay.
I can relax a little bit and let other people talk.
Well,
I don't have to do Charlie Brown's teacher then, huh?
I'm sorry?
We don't have to do Charlie Brown's teacher. Wah, 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 wah.
Nothing changed here in Wisconsin, of course. Russ Feingold was practically unopposed.
Mm-hmm.
Tammy Baldwin, who is my rep, was basically unopposed. The Democrats have actually taken control of the state legislature for the first time in 14 years.
Oh, boy.
And one of the things that, I don't know if I brought this up during election, there was a item on our ballot requiring the state to provide all citizens with health care.
Oh, boy.
And that passed by, I believe, the final tally was about 73-27.
Oh, my
goodness. I mean, it passed just hugely overpassed. Huh. And, of course, we were talking about the fact that the schools did get their cap-busting promise of an extra $13 million.
Mm-hmm.
So, as a general rule, I would suggest, based on everything that I've read, it was a Republican nightmare.
Yes.
But of course, if I can recall a favorite old movie, it was a piece of undigested meat that caused that nightmare. It was something the Republicans did to themselves.
Yes.
So
I'm
kind of going, well, you asked for it. And then, of course, I look at all the Democrats that have been elected, including Barack Obama, and go, you asked for it.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't necessarily want all the bad that is likely or possible to happen over the next 4 years to happen. But at the same token, apparently Americans want it to happen. I can only take comfort in the fact that I know for a fact, absolutely, positively guaranteed that the next 4 years will not turn out the way Barack Obama hopes they will.
And I agree with that.
I agree also.
Yep.
You know, I'm certain it won't turn out the way we want it to. I'm certain, you know, it's just the nature of the idea. You know, Bush's life was completely changed on 9/11.
Yes,
both his political career and his personal life, along with everyone else's personal lives and political careers. But there was no way you could imagine that, you know, on January 20th, 2000. So, you know, the reality is it's going to be a rather interesting 4 years, and we have brought it upon ourselves, and despite the American Conservative Party's position and principles and founding and all of our efforts that are going to continue to grow and expand over the next, you know, decade or so, I am taking personal blame for part of what has happened to us, because I was one of those people that abdicated my responsibilities to be a good citizen. I said, government, you take care of this. I'm busy.
Mm-hmm.
And
yep.
That gave government a lot of authority it should never have had and doesn't know how to deal with, and it's not its fault.
Well, and quite frankly, the government is ill-equipped to deal with it. I mean, if look at what the response has been to the financial meltdown. It has been absolutely counterproductive, the things that they have put in place. But they have been seen to have been doing something, which I guess is their metric for success, that they did something. Doesn't matter that that something that they did was counterproductive, wrong, both on a governmental level and on a moral level. They did something. And
they don't know how to stop.
Pardon me?
They don't know how to stop.
No, they don't.
After they get started, they keep on going. It's like the thing that they're talking about now with bailing out the big three automakers. They don't know how to stop.
Exactly. Exactly. And my understanding was that the automakers got at least some portion of that bailout of the original $700 billion that was passed.
$25 billion. They got 25.
Yeah. And so now they're looking for another 50 is my understanding.
Yeah, but they'll be in exactly the same boat that AIG is. And I'm not going to get into a whole lot of the discussion about AIG.
Right.
Because a lot of it tends to be more technical than most people are willing to tolerate and stuff like that.
Exactly.
But I will suggest the following. When AIG first was beginning to, you know, when the problems were being publicized, and they were suggesting that they were going to sell $20 billion worth of assets and that would take care of it. That was on a Tuesday afternoon. By Friday afternoon, AIG was saying that they were going to have to sell $40 billion worth of assets in order to take care of the problem. And in the over the weekend, and this was one of the first over the weekend actions by the Fed, the number became $85 billion. We had a double and a double and another double. And, of course, on Monday morning I said $85 billion isn't going to be enough.
Right.
And they're up to $137 billion, and they're looking for more. You know, this is the problem. The $700 billion isn't enough. $50 billion to the automakers isn't enough.
Right.
You know, and, you know, the Treasury can keep printing money all day long. You know, and they can keep announcing we're going to give them all this money. But, you know, the economy is contracting. And if it's contracting and you're printing money, there's only one result that can happen.
Yep.
And it's not going to be pretty as it happens out in any of those cases.
Yep.
You know, you're right, Rick. You know, and they don't – they don't know how to stop once they started, and then, of course, that's the whole moral hazard issue is, you know, once you've taken a step across that line, you know, where what is to stop you, you know, from crossing that line when you're already on the other side of it?
Yeah, we've crossed that line already.
Right.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And I, you know, and frankly, and, you know, people that come to the American Conservative Party and run headlong into the brick wall that is Tracy, sorry, you know, I tend to be that way. It is, in fact, upon that one idea that Bill, Rick, Tracy, we can compromise in our daily lives, our principles, in order to actually function as individuals.
Mm-hmm.
And politicians, right, by definition, must compromise in order to get things done. It is the political process. It
right.
is a sense of compromise. In relationships, no matter how much you care about what you want to do in life, you must compromise in order to make that relationship work. However, as an organization that is promoting itself on the basis, specifically on the basis of principles, compromise is deadly. It ends this party if we compromise those principles.
Well, it's certainly what ended the Republican Party.
Yeah, you know, dead man walking, people. That's,
yes.
that's the GOP at this point.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and unfortunately for the GOP, you know, they're not zombies like the Democrats. You know, when the GOP finally stops walking, they're actually going to stay dead. The Democrats have figured out how to keep the dead walking, so, you know,
yeah.
they're always going to be around. In any
and
case.
Voting. Yeah.
And voting,
right.
yes. anyways, that's the problem is that, you know, you have to, and I acknowledge this, you know, compromise of principles is something that, you know, happens and you want to try and keep it to a minimum, but as a political party, you know, it's a dangerous and damaging thing that we're being asked to do, and I refuse to do so. The bailout was unnecessary because it wasn't going to do what people were saying it was going to do. It wasn't going to fix anything. It was maybe going to buy us a little time, but it certainly wasn't going to change the outcome. $50 billion to the automakers isn't going to change the outcome.
No, it isn't.
You know, unless you're willing to suggest that you're going to give whatever it takes to prevent it from happening. And right now, people are looking at, you know, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac and recognizing that we're basically saying whatever it takes to make it not happen. That's an awful, terrible position to put the government in. That's an awful, terrible position to put our pocketbooks in, because we're the ones that are going to have to pay it.
Well, and not only that, but it's futile in any event. I mean, there is nothing that is going to prevent the recession that is in the process of occurring. That is going to happen. How deep and how long that's going to last, that's going to depend on what does the government do. If the government will get out of the way...
Yeah, if it gets out of the way, it'll be less.
That's exactly right. If they don't get out of the way, they're going to make it worse. And it will take longer to recover from it. So the government simply is not equipped to deal with market forces. It has no good policy positions to take in regard to market forces. They simply have to let the market forces work, and the market will, in fact, shake that out. Does that mean that we could lose the auto manufacturers? You know, we may lose the names, but we aren't going to lose the basic capacity. Now, will anybody buy their product? It will depend very much on what product do they make.
I made that point last week.
I'm sorry,
Rick.
I didn't hear you, Rick.
Yeah, I mean, that was my point. One of my points last week when we were talking is that, you know, to fix the auto industry, we don't need to bail them out. We need to get to convince them they need to make stop making substandard products. So they
exactly.
can compete.
And
you know,
they also need to make products that people will buy.
Well,
and
look,
that doesn't
okay,
mean
look,
7 mile per hour, 7 mile per gallon vehicles. It doesn't. I'm sorry,
okay.
Tracy. Nobody's buying those.
Today. Nobody's buying them today.
And
everybody
and when,
was buying them last year. Last
when,
year people were buying Hummers, you know, as fast as they could produce them. They were
yep.
buying F-350s as fast as they could produce them.
That's
last
true.
Year.
Yep.
No company, well, you know, maybe, you know, no. No company that size is going to be able to change on a dime, okay? I think that they were stupid in as much as, you know, when you put all of your eggs into one, you know, basket, you're kind of asking for your hat to be handed to you as you walk out the door.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they should have, it would have been smart business for them to have a line of, you know, Prius wannabes, you know, in addition to their very, you know, profitable Hummers, but, you know, they took that idea that they were making, you know, $25,000 profit on, you know, on Hummers and said, you know, we can keep doing this all day long. Well,
mm-hmm.
eventually something would happen where nobody wanted to buy them anymore. And, of course, right now it doesn't make any difference what GM is producing or Toyota or Ford or Chrysler or anything. Nobody's buying anything, you know. I got a hunch that this, you know, 20 to 40% drop we saw in auto sales in October is going to be great compared to what's going to happen now, this month. I think it's going to be even worse,
worse. And that could very well be true. But, you know, Tracy, all three of us on the line right now are probably old enough to remember when you looked at a GM product and inside the door it said Body by Fisher. Y'all remember that?
Yes, I do,
no.
actually.
Let me tell you the story about Fisher. Fisher used to make auto bodies. And they made them for Ford. And they made them for GM. And they made them for Packard. They made auto bodies for anybody who wanted to buy them. And then they started saying, you know, we're selling a lot of auto bodies to GM. Maybe we ought to concentrate on them. We'll still make bodies for other folks, but we're going to concentrate on them. And so they did. And GM became more and more an important part of their business. And finally, GM recognized what was happening and said, you know what? If they don't have our business, they cease to exist. And so they made Fisher an offer that they couldn't refuse and basically took them over. My point is this. Anytime you rely on a certain small segment of the market to provide your profits, you have made a gigantic mistake. And you had better be figuring out how you rectify that. And that is exactly what the big three did. They made big gas-guzzling SUVs because they could make a lot of money on them and people wanted them. What they forgot was, if that demand fell off overnight, they were in deep, serious trouble.
And
they
didn't
have a fallback.
And you know what the consequence is? You know what the consequence should be?
That they either rectify that or go out of business, one or the other.
Right.
Yep.
You know, you make a bad business decision, you know, sorry, but no one should be saving your butt because you screwed up.
That's exactly right.
You know, and as conservatives, you know, that's one of the reasons I think we get why so many people think we're such mean, terrible people. because we accept the idea that people can make whatever decision they want, and we want them to be able to have as many of those choices as possible.
Yep.
But we also want them to suffer or benefit from the consequences of those choices.
That's exactly right.
You know, and if you're going to raise a child and you allow them to make mistakes, you have to them allow them to suffer, you know, the consequences of those mistakes. Now, you don't certainly don't want the child to die, so that
right.
the analogy doesn't carry through altogether. But, you know, what's good for GM is not necessarily good for anybody else. And if,
mm-hmm.
you know, GM has a cancer, you know, it either gets cut out or it dies.
Yes.
And, you know, unless GM is willing to pay the piper, call the surgeon,
mm-hmm.
I don't think they get the benefit just because they do. And
I agree with that. I mean, I have to tell you that everybody loved GM a few years ago. They were the big boys on the block. Their price was doing well and all that kind of thing. But the market has a way of saying, oops, conditions changed. Are you nimble enough to change with them? And if you aren't, I mean, it's kind of Darwin's theory writ large on the business world. You either adapt or die, one or the other.
You know what, I'm not adverse to the idea of government stepping in after the fact. I don't think it's necessarily right that it should do so, but you know there are a certain number of people and situations that are going to suffer the consequences of GM's bad acts, and through no fault of their own, they're going to be in that position. And the only ones that I'm thinking about at this particular point in time are the retirees, GM retirees that are going to suffer immensely if GM were to fail, and I mean fail bad.
How do they suffer?
Well, what GM would do if it fails is it declares bankruptcy, and all those contracts, including the responsibility to provide health care and pensions, are contracts that disappear with that bankruptcy filing just as much as contracts with their suppliers.
But there's already a process in place for that. The government takes over the obligation.
And it's a government response to it. And it's a government response to it. And so
But the government already steps into that.
Yeah, and
that's that whole retirement, that government retirement guarantee insurance scam.
Well, I'm glad you say it's a scam because it's already broke.
Well, of course it is.
So GM's going to make it a lot worse. But in any case, that's kind of getting the cart
yes,
before
it is.
The horse. We don't know if GM's
yep.
actually going to be in that situation. But you know what? That's what I would prefer to have happen. At least it makes it more sensible, and that's one of the problems that I had with AIG's bailout and a lot of the banks' bailout. You know, if you're going to bail them out, you know, let's do this. Let them fail and then bail out the pieces afterwards. That's what we did with the savings and loans, and I think it's a much better way of responding to it. You know, if a tree is falling over, what you do is you let it fall over. Getting underneath it to try and hold it up is stupid.
Yes, it is.
You know, let it fall and then cut up the pieces and fix whatever it breaks when it falls.
I guess I have a little bit different view of it because I think that if you protect people from those kinds of mistakes that companies that they work and worked for, if you protect them from those mistakes, then they have no vested interest in seeing that both labor and management are reasonable because they know that they get taken care of in the end.
Oh, I don't think that it's a great idea that the GM retirees get 100% of what they would have expected if GM didn't fail. You know, I don't know what's the right answer there. But I'm going to carry this over into the general idea of political situations.
Okay.
You know, the GOP is on the ropes right now.
Yes,
and the question is, for most conservatives, are you going to save it? Or are you going to let it fail, let it, you know, let it die its, you know, its death that it is attempting to occur anyways, and then pick up the pieces after the fact? I think a lot of conservatives, Republicans, and people that would normally consider the idea of a third party bad because they believe the only choice is one of the two parties, are willing to try and save a GOP that is, in my opinion, unsavable.
Mm-hmm.
And the choice is, do we let the GOP fail and pick up the pieces, which, of course, is my point, my position of letting things happen, or, mm-hmm. you know, do people try and save it? No, I'm not interested in saving the GOP. As far as I'm concerned,
yep.
it can die. I'm done with it.
Yep.
You know, I left 2 years ago, and, you know, that's the end of it for me. But there are a lot of people this past week that have begun to look at the GOP and see what a lot of other people have been seeing for a longer period of time.
Mm-hmm.
We have received lots of emails over the last week from people that are absolutely, I've gotten both. They're absolutely disgusted with the GOP,
mm-hmm.
which I think is kind of interesting because I think they're disgusted with the GOP that they lost.
Mm-hmm.
Not that the GOP was doing something wrong or that it was bad or that the GOP had sold its soul to the devil.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think they're mad because the GOP lost. That's the people that are angry right now. That's what I think the problem is. The people that are disappointed might have been hopeful. Maybe they were relying on Sarah Palin to pull the GOP back from the brink of, you know, death.
Mm-hmm.
I like Sarah Palin. I think she's great, and I think she's a strong conservative in all the right ways, but she certainly did not have the ability to save the GOP.
No.
And I think she is now getting out from that falling tree. I don't think she's going to try and put her hands up and try to stop it from falling, especially given the way that she's been treated over the last week.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I was listening to part of her interview, you know, from last night and tonight. Well, the rest of it's going on now. But, you know, I'm sitting like going, you know, Sarah, you know, we're here. We'll take you.
Yeah. You know,
we're more interested in there. And, you know, it's the flush of new people that are looking, that are casting around, trying to find, you know, things, something that is more in tune with what they believe. They have come to the point in their lives that we have
mm-hmm.
in the past that the lesser of two evils is still evil.
Still
and
evil.
And until you're ready to stop, you know, choosing evil, you know, you're going to be stuck trying to fix it.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And, you know, time to let the GOP die. It has not shown itself willing to address the issues.
Right.
I mean, if, you know, if somebody has cancer and they're walking around with a operable tumor and they're going, you know, I have cancer, we'll go to the doctor. Yeah, but I have cancer, it's going to kill me. But just go to the doctor.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's cancer. Nothing I can do. I'm going to die. But yeah, go to the doctor and they'll take care of that.
Yeah, right.
You know, that's the GOP. Hey, GOP, you know, you need to listen to the conservatives. No, you know, you conservatives, you're killing us. You know,
mm-hmm.
No, it's not. We're not killing you. We're trying to say, if you listen to us, you'll be healthier. No, that's the situation that I see.
Yeah. I think what a really interesting development is all of the conversation that's going on amongst the, I will call them the conservative intelligentsia, about, okay, where does the GOP go from here? And conservatives are saying, if you want to save the GOP party, you're going to have to get rid of your current leadership. You're going to have to get real conservatives in there. You're going to have to get back to a conservative message because that wins. And you hear a lot of talk about exactly what you said. Oh, the conservatives are killing us. We've got to make the tent broader. We've got to move more to the center. We have to do this, that, the next thing. And it seems to me that if I had a business that over two business cycles had suffered disastrous losses, I would be looking at the management of that business and saying, folks, you haven't gotten the job done. I'm sorry. Here's your pink slip, 2 weeks severance, and I'm looking for some new leadership. But that is not what is happening in the Republican Party today. So, if they aren't interested in changing, if they want to keep on with the same thing that got them in the position that they are in now, then it's time to leave them, and it's time to find a conservative party.
Yeah. I don't think they're going to do that.
I don't think they're going to do that either, but it's still, that's what needs to happen.
You know, I said this to somebody else over the weekend. I said, if you want to know if leadership is working, there are two tests, two things that you can look to see if leadership is working or not. The first one is, is the job that the leader is supposed to be doing getting done? You know, is the task to which the leader is leading the group being accomplished? And we can certainly see that the idea that the GOP, which is to increase, you know, GOP candidates in office, is not occurring.
That's right.
So we can say that leadership is failing on the job that they have to do. Of course, you can also suggest that if you look at the legislative results, the GOP is failing there pretty seriously too.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the first thing. Is the job being done, getting done? And if it's not, that's a failure of leadership. And the other thing that you can see, that you can tell whether leadership is working or not, is, are the people that are being led following?
Yep.
If the people that the leader is leading are following and supporting the leader, then even if the job's not getting done yet, it probably will get done because there's plenty of, you know, force and energy behind the leader so that it probably will be done in time.
Mm-hmm.
You just maybe need to give it some more time to work. But
right.
Those are the two things that I look at. You know, is a leader being effective? Is the job getting done? And are the people that the leader leading following? And right now, you know, 56% of the people that earn over $200,000 a year voted for Barack Obama.
Right.
Are they nuts?
Exactly.
You know, exactly what brain cells, you know, and it's certainly not brains, because it's got to be individual cells, are firing in those heads that they would vote for Barack Obama when he says,
right,
you're the ones that are going to eat all of these taxes.
Yep.
So it just doesn't make any sense to me when people do that. And I don't know what the percentage was. Was it something like, you know, only 64% or 66% of Republicans voted for John McCain? That means
34%
of Republicans. I mean, 34% of Republicans didn't vote for John McCain. They voted for Barack Obama.
Hmm.
Okay, exactly. I, you know, I can understand people having a big, you know, big to-do about Barack Obama. But I cannot imagine for a second, and of course this we heard this, you and I, Bill, have listened to this for the last 8 months from people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're a conservative and you don't want to vote for John McCain, you certainly can't be considering voting for Barack Obama. Well, 36% or 34% of Republicans did vote for Barack Obama.
Boy.
What
a sad commentary.
You know, so here we have a leadership in the GOP. They're not getting the job done, and the people are not following them. So you got to wonder about the leadership of it.
Yep.
It's a
dead horse.
Go ahead.
There's a real hunger out there for that. I was for a while involved and on the website of Team Sarah, and they started out, well, at this point, probably 2 months ago. And they have 55,000 members now. You can't get on their chat line. There's just way too many people on it, and it goes way too fast, and you can't have any kind of a conversation. I know of two other websites. They're called Conservative Talk, that have between them probably 1,000 members. And they, one of them started up less than a week ago. The other one started up maybe a month ago. So people are looking for that conservative viewpoint. They're looking for that conservative flag to rally around. It's our job to get the message out and say, you know what, folks? There's a party that is principle-driven, that espouses the principles that you all believe in, and you really ought to come join us.
Well, that kind of brings me to the last thing that I wanted to talk about tonight.
Okay. Good segue there.
Yeah, it's one of those things that that I have not shied away from discussing on the American Conservative Party website, www.AmericanConservativeParty.org. I haven't shied away from it there. I haven't shied away from it in private discussions, and I haven't shied away from it on other sites. And I suggested so much in our conversation just a little while ago about not backing down from our principles. It is probably the one place that conservatives think they must stand by in order to be considered conservatives. And I want to suggest to them very, very carefully, okay, that their position on one or two subjects, their litmus test for what makes a conservative is, I don't want to say short-sighted, but is too narrow a litmus test. We've had two, I don't want to say a minor desertion. That kind of suggests that, you know, they just up and left. We've had two people leave in the last week that were going to be pretty involved in the leadership of parts of the American Conservative Party, and the issue was our principles. And their concern was that I had become too unwilling to compromise the principles that we as a group, as a membership, discussed, debated, questioned, and eventually wrote down and voted upon, that I had become too unwilling to compromise those positions to satisfy that litmus test. And the only thing I can say to people that are considering the American Conservative Party is that you need to look at our principles. Our principles deal with the idea that individuals have rights, that individuals have responsibilities, and that government needs to be a small, effective, but limited partner in our social life. One of the things that we've said repeatedly is that we are for limited government. And I'm going to ask you to, and I'm going to ask anybody that's listening, to change that. Uh-oh. Tracy, compromising principles? No. I want you to say something different. We are no longer looking for limited government because I don't know what that means. I don't know if you can articulate what limited government means. We want to limit government. The Constitution does not tell us what we can do. The Constitution limits what government can do.
Absolutely.
Yes.
And we need to return to the point where we take that Constitution and begin to limit government back to the framework that our founding fathers created for it to function in. It is no longer acceptable for them to be limited government involvement because limited government involvement seems to be whatever somebody thinks government should be doing. You and I and many other conservatives do not want government to have unlimited money to do whatever it wants to intrude upon our personal lives, our personal liberties. However, there are people in the conservative parties, in the conservative movement, in the Republican Party specifically, but in other places, that believe government intrusion into personal liberties is acceptable if the reason is right. And my position has been, and it has cost us people, and it probably will in the future, that is wrong. Government needs to be limited to the framework that it was meant to be working in. We want to limit government. The use of government in personal lives is wrong. The individual is sovereign. That is our fundamental principle of this party. And I am going to continue to be uncompromising about that. And I welcome every single conservative, every single person, whether they think they're conservative or not, to look at those principles and say, I agree. And I think those people are perfectly welcome and happily welcomed into this party. But if you look at those principles and say, well, the individual is not really sovereign if they're not doing what we think they should be doing.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, we need to get government to make people behave the way we think they should behave. That's wrong. It's wrong. It's not politically correct. It's wrong. And if you can't accept that, say hi, say bye, and go find somewhere else where government is an acceptable tool for the intrusion into personal liberty.
Mm-hmm.
Because frankly, you know, I, and I think most of the people here now, believe that that's wrong.
You know, Tracy, I agree with what you just said. I think the part of that argument that distresses me the most is the intellectual dishonesty that it contains. Because if you argue or if you want to make the argument that, well, government can meddle in private lives if the reason is good enough, then what you're saying is that any time a majority of the citizenry thinks some aspect of your personal life ought to be meddled with, that's perfectly acceptable. Now, that may be absolutely contra to the idea that the people making that argument will agree with, but once they make that argument, then they're bound to accept the results of that. And if the results are contra to what it was that they wanted, they've got no room to bitch.
Right. You end up with the situation we have with the bailout. Once
yep.
you have compromised that position, there is no reason, there is nothing to stop you from continuing down that path. And it is the one place that, and I don't want to make it sound like I'm the only one that's upholding this principle. I'm not. I mean, I have watched the discussions go on, and there are people that have joined in the discussions on the website in those discussions and stood up for those principles that they agree exist and are part of what makes this party the conservative party.
Right.
And it is a principle that we want to limit government. We are no longer accepting the general concept of limited government because we have a $2 trillion, government, it's $3 trillion at this point. We have a $3 trillion, government. How much is limited? $2.5 trillion?
Yeah, right.
Okay.
Maybe $2.5 trillion.
what we were looking for here is this idea that government needs to have a limit.
Yes, it does.
And that limit is established by the Constitution. And I'm going to repeat those two things. The Constitution of the United States does not provide our rights. It does not protect us. It limits government's ability to act. The Constitution was designed to box government into a very specific way of functioning. And if somebody wants to disagree with me, I'm going to suggest that they spend a long and enjoyable evening with the Federalist Papers, because that is what our Founding Fathers were looking for.
Yep.
And the second thing, I don't remember. So, fortunately, we only have 2 minutes left, so I probably don't have to worry too much about that.
No, you don't.
But,
it was the required reading, I think, is the U.S. Constitution, the Federalist Papers, and the Articles of Confederation. If you read those three, in the case of the Articles of Confederation and the U.S. Constitution, they are single documents. Federalist Papers are multiple documents by multiple authors. But it gives you a very, I think, clear understanding of what it was that the folks that set up this system were driving at. And I have to tell you, they were so prescient on that. It's absolutely incredible to me.
Yeah, it is scary to me that people are. Did you hear that?
I heard that. I don't know what it was, but I heard it.
I don't know why that it started doing something like that. Why is it doing that? I'm glad it's telling me that there's only 49 seconds left in a thing. So let's end it here. It's been an interesting week. It's going to be an interesting, 4 years.
Anyway.
And we're going to continue to talk about it and the future of the American Conservative Party and the GOP and principles and stands. And we're going to look for volunteers to, offer specific skills and time and energy. And we'll see what we can do about letting the GOP die a swift and, you know, a swift death with dignity.
There you go.
Bill,
Tracy.
Bill, Rick, thanks for joining us this evening.
You bet.
And we'll talk to you soon. Everybody else,
take care.
Talk to you next week.
Good night.
Good night.